and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome to the show. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Al Sparks. It's our final day filling in for Stephen the Mooks, the lovely and talented Jackie Schechner here, giving an air of legitimacy to the show as Tony and I try to pop it off the rails and turn it into a late-night rock show from 1987.
Headbangers Ball.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
It would be kind of awesome. See, that's what happens.
You guys want a moment?
No. When it's just Tony and I, that's where it goes. I mean, he's on the mic way more.
Which ups my cool points by default.
Well, you got a quick lesson, obviously, in metal this week.
Yes.
But you also, there's a little bit of a Twitter lesson.
No. It's a misunderstanding.
Okay. What's the problem?
Okay, when you retweet something,
sure,
it pops up with an RT in front of it for retweet.
Yeah.
When I retweet something, it just retweets it, and it has, like, the little circle that says retweeted by or whatever. It doesn't add an RT.
Sure.
So I thought you were adding an extra RT, and I said, isn't that redundant? And you said, no, that's actually just happened.
Yeah, it's how your Twitter software or whatever form you're using reads it.
Right.
Because it'll either show the RT, or it'll skip those letters and just have a little underscore that says retweeted
by. Exactly.
But that's the programming of how Twitter works.
Correct.
So, yeah. So, yes. There's no, I just don't want anyone to be upset.
I thought you were being redundant, and that turns out that's just the software.
I would never be redundant. I told you that several times already this morning. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number, and we're going to be talking about a lot of things today. Yesterday, obviously, we had a fantastic discussion with Rick Overton, and it just blew the doors off the place. I got so many Twitter responses and, Facebook stuff about just the depth of the conversation that we had. And I thought we were doing great. I thought, wow, we are really breaking some ground here.
Wicked smart.
As far as wicked smart. Don't quote Boston. We were going to be able to have Lee Camp on the show today, but he's got to go to a gig in Boston.
And he's going
to
be on a bus.
Well, that we give him credit for. Taking public transportation or taking mass trans.
But that's why he can't talk to us, because he's going to be on a bus.
He's going
to
be on a bus. You know what I think is? It's not that Lee Camp could not call us from the bus. It's that he knows once he hung up, he would be in trouble with everyone around him on the bus. I mean, we can hit a dump button here.
Yes.
But if Lee's on a bus, they'll just hear him shouting into his phone. For those of you that don't know, LeeCamp.net is the site. That's comedian and political activist Lee Camp, who's terrific, by the way. He's been on Viewpoint with John Fugelsang a couple times, and he does a thing called The Moment of Clarity that you can – his YouTube videos that you can watch. Really great stuff. A lot of it about – like he had a recent one that I retweeted – I just hit a button. I didn't put an RT, just to clarify, about how the banks are using MERS to manipulate foreclosures.
Okay.
And it's a fascinating thing, because once you look into, he kind of gives you a crash course in a lot of these things on certain issues.
Is it very Matt Taibbi-esque? Because I like a lot of the work that Matt does too.
I do too. Matt Taibbi does some great work, but it's very in depth, and Matt Taibbi does the reporting on it.
Right.
Lee Camp screams at you, so you go read Matt Taibbi.
Ooh.
Does that make sense?
I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's good. You know how there's a great article on something that it may be a little too, like the Affordable Care Act or whatever, and you're like, people need to know that this is a lie, and here's the whole tracing of this entire thing.
Uh-huh.
And
are we interrupting your
No. I just got
communication.
Yeah, my, okay. I got a sext. I apologize. It's a little early, but I mean, my life knows no sleep and wake hours. no, I'm kidding. But in that, you need people to read that. You want people to read that. It's so important. And if they got it, it's exactly where we are, where people hate Obamacare if you poll them, but they are in favor of every element of it read separately or called the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
And part of it is just this thing, and you go, look, they're the same thing.
Right. And you need a Lee Camp-esque.
You need somebody to grab him by the shirt collar and walk over and go, read this article. Pay attention.
And he does that.
You can disagree with stuff, but disagree with what's actually there. Hey, climate change moron. You could disagree with stuff, but disagree with what's actual, not with what, Michelle Bachmann heard from a drive-through preacher that came through a town who went to jail for check fraud 100 years ago, you know, in the South, but is still touring around giving speeches on, I cleaned my life up for Jesus.
Do you think he has time to do that for me in my personal life? Like he could come over and shake me.
Come
and
here.
Be like,
no,
yeah.
I think you should come over here and meet Jackie Schechner. Come here. You moron. Right. And expletive deleted. Because anyway, so Lee's on a bus and can't talk to us today because he's going to Baston, Mass. And if you go to LeeCamp.net, his whole schedule's there. The young man works feverishly as a stand-up
Good.
Comedian. And he's terrific at
it.
We
like people who work.
I do at this point because I'm shooting. I got a major gig. And then I get 2 weeks off. It's nice. It's a good position. This guy is a road warrior right now, you know. But go to LeeCamp.net. Check out the Moment of Clarity. There's umpteen of them now, so you can. If you don't know Lee, it's kind of like discovering a band like Danko Jones or King's X, where you're like, oh, I like that song. A friend played them for. I've never heard of them before. Crap, they have 14 albums. This is awesome.
There's your weekend.
It is so much better to discover a band that's been around versus a new band, because if you do like that new band stuff, you got 2 years till they're going to be able to put out the next record. But if you discover somebody like King's X and you're like, I love this song. Well, guess what, pal? And it's like you've won the lottery or a slot machine, like pull the arm and all these albums come out. And you're like, I can't believe it. My iPod is filled with goldy goodness. So, there is so much, you know, to get to today. It's off the chain. We're going to play some clips from...
Did you just say off the chain?
Oh, I did. and it's in reference to something.
Oh, okay.
Believe me, everything I say
somewhere.
Has an alias or an ironic tangent. Right, yeah. I'm trying to... Because that's the chain I'm on, quite frankly. Stick to the topic, because Jackie gives me a look that can burn through lead.
Yeah, it's different than the don't hit on me from your car look.
Yes, which I
but
I
equally
experienced.
Brutal.
Yes, exactly. They're very similar, actually.
I have one look.
Yeah.
It's don't talk to
severe.
Me.
Severe. Yeah, don't talk to me. Or it isn't don't talk to me. It's stop talking. It's a generalized quit it, which is terrific.
Therein lies my problem.
I would use the word challenge.
Well, my come hither look looks a lot like my don't talk to me look. It's
right.
All
shut up and never say anything again as long as you live.
This is the look you get from and we're gonna talk about a couple things. We're gonna talk about Obama's speech. We're gonna take your calls 1-800-STEPH-12. What he said in the Middle East regarding the peace process, the most direct confrontation of the essence of the issue I've ever heard any politician actually make in a speech, much less the president. And instead of going, this guy is not a friend of Israel, this guy is, you know, siding with the Palestinians against us, the exact opposite reaction was had. And it's interesting, as much as I guess noise has been made about the relationship between him and Bibi Netanyahu, or lack thereof, his relationship with Shimon Peres actually seems way more sound. Mm-hmm. Peres was actually the one who gave him this medal that he got yesterday, which we'll talk about after the break. I mean, putting a medal around his neck, like, thank you for being such an amazing friend of Israel. Shimon Peres put the one on
right in line with what the Republicans accused him of.
Absolutely. Here's what everything we've heard about his relationship with Israel or whatever versus the reality on the ground. And the interesting thing was, and this will shock people, I know, on the right, that the criticism of past policy of the Israeli government and yet unflinching support for their security can go hand in hand. No, it's true. Yes. And the president showed that actually in Israel yesterday. It's amazing because we've had an either or policy. You know, we've had this, we've either had presidents who side completely with Israel, and just unflinchingly knee jerk go with whatever the Israeli government does and kind of ignore any
the
of
no
the,
daylight strategy.
Yeah, that if they start building settlements, it's just kind of like, well, I can't really, and acting as if that's not hamstringing the peace process throughout. But at the same time, and then you have other presidents who are like, I'm not a fan of how they're doing things, so we'll just kind of drift back and let it, let our, you know, standing boilerplate, we always stand with Israel, da 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 da, and no outreach to the people, no expression into the process. And that's been our back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I can't recall a president doing basically what the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is since Carter, I suppose, the way Clinton did it with the sort of the IRA British idea. You know, this can be solved. This can't permanently over. Let's get past this. So I'm fascinated to see what people's response will be to the sound clips we're going to play from the speech yesterday. And if you watched Fox, you didn't see it.
They didn't show it at all?
Nope. We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show. 1-800-STEPH-12 is the number. And we're going to play some of this, but I also want to get from you guys how you think the week went. Real genuine criticism. And,
of us?
Yeah.
You're really inviting us.
So the next time we do this, if there is a next time.
Oh, please be kind.
Which I doubt. We'll get a real read on how we did this week. It was a ice skate uphill. Am I awake right now? I don't even know. We'll be back. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
You're invited.
What's all that noise?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Show. Danko Jones right out of the box. Will somebody please go on Twitter, and since we're retweeting things and we're discussing the mechanics of Twitter, at Danko Jones, D-A-N-K-O Jones,
right. And tell them we said hi.
Tell them Jackie Schechner has a new crush on him.
I don't know what he looks like.
She likes a man with a natural tan, and
he's a
6'9". He's so tall. I don't know how tall he actually is.
And he has a lion and some hot chicken boots.
Yes. the guy's awesome. He's such a sweetheart, and he's a great rock and roller and a great front man. And
absolutely one of the best front men in the business right now.
Absolutely.
Opinion.
And so
I'm
much
sure
fun.
I'm sure he's just waiting for me.
Huh?
I'm sure he's just waiting
for
me.
Even if he doesn't know it.
He looked me up and down. I don't. I'm going to go with no.
See, you're making assumptions again about what men want. What men expect, and you're mixing it with your own lack of self-confidence
there
in like
no
two
lack
areas.
Of self-confidence.
Yes, there is.
It's
there has to be.
It's very hard to compete with a lion and a woman in thigh-high leather boots. That's
which
all
one concerns you the most?
The lion,
right?
I can get boots.
Yeah. That's right. Woman in thigh-high boots, you're on notice. Getting past the... Because I'm not a cat person. That's what it is. That's why she can't date Danko Jones, is because she's not...
I am a cat person.
I want to play a couple of these from Obama's speech in the West Bank yesterday. Let's play track one. Here you go.
I've returned to the West Bank because the United States is deeply committed to the creation of an independent and sovereign state of Palestine. In our discussion with President Abbas, I heard him speak eloquently about the difficult issues that cannot be ignored. Among them, problems caused by continued settlement activity, the plight of Palestinian prisoners, and access to holy sites in Jerusalem. I understand that the status quo isn't really a status quo because the situation on the ground continues to evolve in a direction that makes it harder to reach a two-state solution. And I know that the Palestinian people are deeply frustrated. So one of my main messages today, the same message I'm conveying in Israel, is that we cannot give up. We cannot give up on the search for peace, no matter how hard it is.
There you go. There's an affirmation of that quest in as stark terms as you would need, that this is not going to be something we sideline. Or in the words of Mitt Romney, kick down the road.
Yeah, that was epic, huh?
If you want, let's talk about for a second the perception of the Republican Party's relationship with Israel and the reality of the Democrats' position in their relationship with Israel. Because Republicans ran a guy who did two amazing things during the last campaign. He said openly, that's something where you really, it's never going to be solved, and you basically just kick the can down the road, make it the next guy's problem. You got bigger fish to fry.
Which is an unbelievable thing for a presidential candidate to say about an issue that large.
Especially when you leave a few weeks later and go there to campaign for money. Is there
and
some...
And bring donors with you.
Right. Which you had to do. And by the way, in your sensitivity to the Jewish people and going to Israel to show your respect, have your fundraiser on a holiday. Remember that?
Yes.
They scheduled it on a holiday that they were just... And they were like, well, we'll keep doing it. We'll do it quietly. Like, we won't serve wine or something. And like, dude, that's not the point.
No.
This is okay. So the amount of like just cultural insensitivity is stunning. And from a policy standpoint, kicking it down the road and just going, look, these people, let's be completely honest, they're never going to get their act together. They're basically just going to fight each other, which is tacit to saying, look, they're animals. And animals are just going to keep fighting. You can hose off a couple of dogs, but as soon as you turn your back, they're going to be in the yard biting each other again. It's a losing battle. All you can do is whip one and feed the other. And that's the Republican mechanic.
It's sort of a deep insensitivity to...
The reality of the circumstance.
Yeah, and it's a deep insensitivity to the potential of human nature to try and come to some sort of resolution or to have any faith or hope that we can do something.
Right? Well, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because there's a related science story, and I know this is tangential.
It's okay if it's a connected tangent.
Scientists find...
Does that make sense?
Yes. Scientists find that... And Noam Chomsky actually was a part of this report coming out. Scientists find visions of a benevolent future society motivate reform. That the more people focus on what's possible in human nature, they actually work more to do it. If they imagine things are going to end poorly, all the social reforms, all the climate change stuff, all the, you know, even just normal moralistic behavior starts to go downhill when you think eventually it's going to be a zombie apocalypse.
But isn't that part of the Republican mechanism we talked about yesterday
or
the day before about keeping people pessimistic and downtrodden and feeling like there is no hope, and that way you can control more.
And then we're surprised at how they handle the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. That this is almost, like I said yesterday when we were talking with Rick, there are some people who recognize that the tree of conflict will always grow because it's part of human nature and you will always do it. And instead of trying to weed it out and create a better garden to carry the metaphor forward, what they've decided to do is live off the fruit of the tree of conflict. That they have literally said, I can survive on this and I can get fat on it. And it's
a good analogy.
And it's
metaphor.
And since you can, it's the
onomatopoeia. No,
it's a metaphor. The tree part is the metaphor. And by the way, it's not an analogy to say a Democrat, Obamacare, like Nazis. That's a comparison.
Okay.
That's a direct comparison in motivation, in methodology. That's a comparison.
Okay.
An analogy is when you take something that is not like it and make the comparison so to bring out the starkness of that contrast or that comparison. In that, you go, you know, Nazis are like a weed in your garden. That's an analogy.
Okay.
Because there's no – you can't say Nazis are like those white supremacists down the street from me. That's just a comparison.
Okay.
And very important for the discussion we'll be having after we come back from the break. Trust me on this. But the idea that scientists have actually found
now
out –
How do you feel the need to justify every tangent?
Because you're making me feel guilty about it. I mean, I can't compete with the lion that is your stare. That when you
shut up and never say anything again as long as you live.
All right, Jackie. We'll be back right after this with more clips from that and your calls. 1-800-STEPH-12. I'm Hal Sparks filling in on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks filling in while Steph and the Mooks are on vacation. We do have a mild update. Apparently, it is wherever Steph is spying slash I guess you can call it a vacation. I think I tried to call it a vacation, I think, on Tuesday, and I got the language police showed up and gave me a ticket because you can't call what she does when she's away a vacation by any stretch of the imagination. It's just too much stuff going on.
Well, it looks like she cut down her 8-hour hike to a 7-hour hike.
See, now she's starting to get reasonable. Of course, she filled that other hour with push-ups, I think is what it was.
Because I did get a photo of her, very King of the Hill, King of the Hill, King of the World.
Yes.
King of the Hill, totally different. A very King of the World, hands up, photo of
her. I'm Stephanie Miller, and I'm standing up here in my shorts.
Right. Not quite.
A very King of the World photo of her standing amidst a bunch of rocks. And she said this was...
Yelling Drago.
On her 7-hour hike.
Uh-huh.
So she's clearly hiked to the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And is...
The only way I would actually do a 7-hour hike or whatever is if Vince DiCola was following me with a synthesizer going, playing the soundtrack to Rocky IV. Drago! Like that I would do.
Yeah.
That
I mean, she's
do.
In amazing shape to begin with, and then she uses her vacation
sure.
time to...
Yes.
Just tighten.
Right.
I can't tell you to lose weight. Just tighten. Do you know what that's from?
No.
Oh, it's from Knocked Up.
Oh,
you see
yeah.
that? Like, we can't tell you to lose weight. Just tighten.
male to female or female to male? Because I think it applies both directions.
I think it was both. It was Kristen Wiig and whoever
right.
the executive was. They were telling Katherine Heigl's character that she didn't have to lose weight to be on camera, but they couldn't tell her that. But she had to tighten.
Right. It would do men some good, I think, to do
tighten.
A bit of tightening.
Yeah, there are
what?
Plenty of men where that would be.
let's take a couple of calls because there's actually, let me play two clips, and then we'll take some calls, because I want them to hear this. Let's try the anti-Fox clip. That's the one that probably annoys them the most, I think.
Israel has the unshakable support of the most powerful country in the world.
Yeah, but enough about China. What about the U.S.? No, that's what they said over at Fox, basically. No, I'm kidding.
Obama never stands with Israel. He probably meant Iran. When he says that in his head, he's like mouthing America, but he's thinking North Korea.
Amercia.
Yeah, Amercia, yeah. Which is, by the way, they had a presidential election in Amercia, and Mitt Romney won hands down.
That's because they have a crack digital team on that.
Yes, they do.
Campaign.
They got a brand new digital team and a 50-state strategy.
They're going to dump Amercia, a lot of money into that
yeah.
Amercia strategy.
Amercia only has two states, though, and their actual Providence is.
La Jolla.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and Alhambra.
Yeah. And everybody, when you sneeze, instead of bless you, everyone says mercy. That's the only way it happens. My mom lives there. No. So let's play. That's the anti-Fox. And this is the one when he's addressing, the violence that Palestinians experience and balancing it in the same speech, the violence that Israelis experience. And I think very clearly.
It's not just when settler violence against Palestinians goes unpunished. It's not right to prevent Palestinians from farming their lands or restricting a student's ability to move around the West Bank or displace Palestinian families from their homes. Neither occupation nor expulsion is the answer.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty direct.
Yeah.
Pretty, while giving absolutely unflinching support to the security of Israel, not saying that any move the Israeli government wants to make, the United States has to back. We shouldn't be that way with any country.
I think that's what we were talking about yesterday, is not giving carte blanche because we're afraid to speak out and say maybe some of Israel's actions
the behavior's not
necessarily
healthy.
Be
right.
condoned under all circumstances.
Right. Let's take some calls. So let's go to Edgar in Gary, Indiana. Hey, Edgar, how are you? Good morning. Turn your TV down and join us.
Hello?
Come on, Edgar. We got you. He was holding and he's watching TV and he went to the bathroom and then he's coming back.
He made an egg.
And we lost Edgar. Okay,
oh,
sorry.
No.
Edgar, call back if you heard that. So let's go to Bob in Illinois. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Hal. How are you?
I'm much better because you're dead on the on the phone and you're ready to go.
Hey, listen. I'm a progressive. I'm also Jewish. I live in Skokie, Illinois. you know, with the United
States. There are other Jews there, I've heard.
Oh, yeah, a lot of Jews there.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, I'm a progressive here in the States. When it comes to Israel, I'm probably a little bit more on the right. Here's the reality. You know how we see that there's really nobody to negotiate with in the Congress because
uh-huh.
they're just so set in the ways they are? Unfortunately, you have a situation with the Palestinians, and I don't think there's any argument. You got Hamas, which is dead set against doing anything with Israel, and you got Fatah, which has its hands tied, okay? You also have a situation. Let me ask you a question, Hal, realistically.
All right.
Tell me where I'm wrong.
Okay.
If you wanted to stop the Israelis from continuing to build settlements, wouldn't you sit down and start to negotiate? Because the settlements would probably stop once the negotiations get really serious.
Really?
And instead,
you really? Because there have been several times over where Israel has made an agreement specifically about not moving forward with settlements, and then has continued to move forward with settlements even after, that was a decision. And even if you go, well, a rocket or something happened, and therefore, but then all this is off, and we're going back to settlements.
I think it was 3 years ago, Netanyahu said, no settlement building, nothing for the next 6 months, let's sit down and start negotiating.
Right.
And the other side, the Palestinian side, said, that's not good enough. And come on, if you really want to make peace, you sit down and you start to negotiate. Neither side's going to get what they want in the end, okay? But that's what a negotiation is all about.
Sure.
But if you don't sit down, and here's the other thing.
Well, the idea that the problem that they had, I think, was the idea that just for the next 6 months, there were no promises that the settlements will stop. And that's a weird way to start a negotiation.
But again, Hal, if you want to stop the settlements from being built, okay, then they're not going to keep building if you have serious negotations. They're going to stop. And if I'm the Palestinians.
Well, I don't think they believe that. I don't think the Palestinians have any reason to believe that. And I certainly don't think that there are, especially the hardliners, the right wing in Israel, have no intention of ending the settlements.
That's true. That's true.
As much as you say that there's control over the Palestinian process by people who are either hamstringed or counter to the process itself, that you have a similar situation with the settlement building in the right wing in the Israeli government.
Sure.
So the question isn't why don't the Palestinians come to the table and why don't the Israelis stop building settlements? Both sides have been in this perpetual circle of conflict, and both sides have a responsibility to do two things. One is actually mean what they say insofar as a two-state solution. And secondly, any spoiler from a non-state actor cannot stop that process. Because it is too easy to either have, a Hamas or Hezbollah-related rocket attack freeze up the peace process when the vast majority of Palestinians want to do it. If the Israelis say any rockets land on our side during this process, all bets are off. Then it's too easy for two things to happen. One is a hardline Palestinian group to go, we don't want the peace process, we want Israel did not exist, so all we have to do is fire one rocket and they're back to ground, back to zero. Or any hardline Israeli group letting or tacitly, if you want to go false flag or those kind of things, the fear of it, whether it exists or not, the fear of it from a Palestinian side is, the hardline Israelis who don't want the Palestinian state to exist have just funded or supplied a rocket to the wrong people so that they can guarantee it doesn't move forward. The point is, you have to stand beyond the violence. Even as the violence continues, we must continue the negotiations, and that hasn't been the case.
Hal, I don't disagree with you to a large extent, but I'm going to say one thing again I don't think you can argue. Unlike what's going on here with the Congress,
mm-hmm.
because of the Israeli parliamentary system, okay, if the hardline right that you're talking about doesn't want to make peace, those people can be voted out of the parliament real quick. They can call for new elections, in the drop of a hat, and I don't know exactly how long it takes, 3 months, 6 months, okay? at the whole situation can be turned upside down. And if I'm the Palestinians, and I saw the reaction yesterday from the youth of the Israeli public, okay?
Yep.
If I want to make peace, what that says to me is, okay, there is something we can do. We can work and try to make peace.
I totally hear your point, but this is the issue I have. They do. There's masses of Palestinians who want to make peace. There are masses of Israelis who want to make peace. And there are two groups of spoilers who can ruin the entire process simply by either tacit approval of a rocket attack or not doing a directive to soldiers not to fire at innocent unarmed Palestinians, because they see a glint of metal, that kind of thing. If you don't, and there are too many spoilers who have active participation in the government, where you would never get to the point where they're out there, an election occurs where you go, that guy told his buddy in the military, who also believes the way he does, to take his guys, didn't say stand down when he should have, and we have another one of these incidents.
Let me ask you one thing, and I'm going to get off and let you answer it,
sure.
Okay? What message do you think the Israelis, the people, the government, such, should have gotten from what happened when they just picked up and left Gaza, and what has resulted as a result of that? What do you think the message what the Israelis should learn from that situation?
How do you mean? What do you mean?
Well, when they first of all, two things happened when they left. The Palestinians in Gaza tore everything down that the Israelis had built and left behind, which could have been, a basis for an infrastructure. And two, the rockets started coming, within a couple of days. So what do you think the message that to the Israelis was? Because there's no doubt Hamas runs Gaza. Nobody else runs Gaza. Mm-hmm. So what do you think the lesson to be learned is on the Israeli side about, what happens if you just pick up and leave, which, by the way, a lot of leftists in Israel right now think is what should be done with the West Bank.
Right. Well, I would say this. I would say anytime you have a contentious border war going on for an extended amount of time, the rage built on both sides becomes untenable. And saying that the people who moved into Gaza specifically represent the whole of the Palestinian people or the whole of the Palestinian people who want to do a two-state solution is exactly the problem. Mm-hmm. And I would say that the tearing down emblems, of the existence of what they considered oppression, even if it might have been stuff that they could have used the building for a school. Mm-hmm. Explain that to many of the Iraqis or the U.S. forces coming into Iraq who, were there to, quote-unquote, liberate the people
mm-hmm.
by destroying infrastructure, which is, we shut the lights off and then have spent billions of dollars turning them right back on. And
mm-hmm.
and so the issue is war as a solution. And the only diplomatic process has to move past they did this, and then we did this, and then they did this, and then we did this. And that's exactly the conversation you and I are unfortunately having right now.
Yep.
What it has to be, and what it will be, is much like the gay marriage debate in the United States,
mm-hmm.
is that the youth will grow up with this is the war of our fathers, and we're sick of it. And every time it happens, quite frankly, bigoted reflex is harder to stamp into the head of a new person than it is into someone who has a history of this conflict, in their blood.
Right. Especially when it's being taught in the schools.
Well, the problem is it's being taught in schools on both sides. This
mm-hmm.
idea, but it doesn't get in the same way. You can teach it in school. We got to take a break, and I appreciate the call,
yeah.
And I'm glad we're having this conversation.
Great job.
Absolutely. This is the depth of this issue is so deep that at some point you have to start swimming. It's almost as if you're looking at, you're like, oh my God, I'm not that great a swimmer, and this water is so deep. Well, the water only has to be as deep as going over the top of your head
okay.
for you to drown, okay? You just have to start swimming. If you concern yourself with the depth of the water,
you'll drown. Because you'll panic.
And that's what happens every time. That's where this conflict was, and it's where the IRA versus the British government was. You had two militant sides, elements of both organizations, totally overshadowing the mechanic and the beliefs and the wants and the desires of the general populace who just wanted to get on with their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, where we are with Israel and Palestine, because the conversation is starting to shift. And the president is helping to shift that conversation. We'll be back with more of the Stephanie Miller Show. Man, we went long in that one, but it was a good conversation worth having. We'll have like 35 seconds in the next break. But we will continue to take your calls, 1-800-STEPH-12. We'll be back after this.
This was so funny in my head when I planned it.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Right, brothers. It's the Stephanie Miller chapter of the Black Label Society. Live to ride, ride to live. That's right. I did it.
I'm so glad you guys didn't let me pick the music this week.
No. Black Label Society. Zach Wild, Ozzy's guitar player for many years in his own band. I mean, just really, it's funny because I was, you know, I was at I've seen him several times or whatever. We were, I ran into him at the Metal Hammer Awards in London. And he's so huge. He's just a big kind of
big guy.
He's a biker looking dude. And he's got this gnarly
big beard.
Gnarly soup filled beard and stuff. And the thing was, he started as a pretty boy.
Oh,
but
yeah.
He looks like a guy who went through the prison ranks. Like he was rolled through prison and came in pretty and went out ugly because that's the way you survive.
What were the years that passed between that?
All the Ozzy years?
The Ozzy years. Road
that,
Ozzy years.
Do it, yeah.
He started, I mean, look at the Moscow Music Peace Festival. This guy's in tight leather bell bottom pants, big girly blonde hair. This ripped physically, you know, and just ladies going bananas for him. And now he looks like he, you know, he's an enforcer for a meth running biker gang. An amazing musician. And I will stand by that the Blessed Hell Ride should have been the next Ozzy record.
I
and
agree.
If Sharon would have let that happen, Ozzy's music career would be more sound than it is song-wise.
Yeah. Totally.
I'll have to say
that. And Jackie,
this is going to sound a little horrible to me saying, but I love his Pride and Glory stuff.
Great.
The more stuff.
He really
Machine
wishes.
Gun Man, all this stuff.
Yeah,
so
he
good.
Totally wishes he was in like the Allman Brothers band or something in his heart. So he's got this kind of country rock thing going on, this chicken picking guitars. You know what I'm talking about, Jackie.
Totally.
By the way, well, fine. You know what? I'll fix the fact that you just gave me that.
Shut up and never say anything again as long as you live.
Look. Here's Patrick in California to fix it for me. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good.
Hey, I just calling. Thanks for the alternative. You guys bring us here, and we really love it. You know, just to give you great feedback, we'll watch you every morning. And Ms. Schechner, she is absolutely gorgeous. She is stunning. So
are you
thanks
awake?
For being there, and thanks for the alternative, okay?
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you.
See?
That's so sweet.
Did that not make up for it?
That's great.
See?
What time did my mom call Patrick and tell him to call me?
Right, exactly. Let's go to Ben, because I asked everybody how we're doing. Let's go to Ben in Boston.
Yes,
we just got a couple minutes. Go ahead, Ben.
Hey, I just wanted to say that I've been listening to Stephanie Miller for years, but Hal and Jackie, you are my favorite fill-in hosts ever.
Oh, that's
and,
nice.
That's great.
I can't say that Jackie's pretty, but Hal, you are gorgeous.
Oh,
I love you on a queer
stroke. He is quite dreamy.
He is incredible.
I mean, you can
dreamy.
Say I'm gorgeous.
Yeah.
You don't have to mean it.
You can appreciate it.
You're gorgeous, but Hal is much more my type.
Thank you, Ben, in Boston. By the way, since you're in Boston, go see Lee Camp. He's your type, and tell him I said so.
I will totally.
He's got longish hair, but he's ballpark. Give him a hug for me.
I will do so.
I appreciate it. Thank
does
you, Ben.
Does he do that for his team? Cheers.
Have a great day.
No, he doesn't. Thank you. Yeah, no, he doesn't.
Now you're going to spread the rumor and Lee's
no,
gonna
no,
have
Lee
to,
doesn't. I'm just
he's
saying.
He's going to have to give him a moment of clarity.
Yeah, exactly. I don't. Lee is totally. He's like me. We're gay adjacent. We're not gay, but we appreciate the real estate.
Which is the best.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Unlike Republicans. We don't have to be part of a group to sympathize with it or support
Wait,
its right
it?
To exist.
Who was it who said he doesn't plan to marry? Was it Saxby Chambliss?
Yeah, we'll play that when we come
so
back.
Good.
Saxby Chambliss is like, I'm not gay. I don't plan on marrying a man. Oh, well, that settles it.
Gay hearts are breaking all
nice.
Over the country.
Finally found a friend. We'll be back right after this, more of the Stephanie Miller Show. And Jackie, there's more compliments waiting. But we'll deal with the Israeli issue, and we'll deal with Michelle Bachmann said something. Michelle Bachmann-y.
I was going to say, that's a surprise that she said something.
Increased desperation is so attractive, don't you think? We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Smart, filling in. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks with Jackie Schechner filling in while Steph and the Mooks are away on vacation. We're, of course, on Current TV. You can go to current.com and find the station that we're on in your cable box. Don't just listen. Watch live. It's so much more fascinating to see people do television in a radio studio. And I don't want to brag right out of the box. Yes, I do, actually. But okay. I want to pretend that I don't want to brag right out of the box. But a rather prominent radio person that we share a building with apparently walked by and saw the number of phone calls we're getting and how our phone lines are blowing up because we're actually having a substantive conversation and people are enjoying it. And some people are calling in because I asked how we're doing to compliment us, that there are so many calls in line. He's like, who's getting all these calls? Who's on the air that's getting all these calls? And Rebecca said, Hal and Jackie are getting all these calls. And he walks over and he looks, and there was like somebody waiting, you know, it was like, Jackie, you're wonderful. And he's like, what the heck is that? He's like, that's not a call. Like, what? Leave us alone.
He's like, who's Jackie?
Yeah, who's Jackie? Who cares? That's not talk radio. Yes, it is. So I'm going to high five myself on that. Like that. Woo! There you go. Big ones.
That was like the worst high five ever.
Well, we're reaching across, and I was still trying to stay on camera because I've had a problem being on mic versus on camera versus on.
Because you move around a lot.
I do. I try to. I gotta be a moving target. We have a bunch of calls, and we're gonna get to them. Let's actually take a few of them. Let's go to Josh in Tennessee. Hey, Josh, how are you?
How you doing, Hal?
Good.
First off, you are not nearly as nice to wake up to as Stephanie.
I know
if it
that.
Wasn't for Jackie, I would have turned the channel.
I understand. Believe me, that wasn't lost on me. She said, would you like me to come in next week? And she didn't mean all next week. I was like, yes, you're going to be there every day because I need something for the Joshes in Tennessee. But go ahead. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. All right, here's my point. Mm-hmm. I think with both of our rights, Israel's right and America's right, I think most of the main problem with the right is they spend so much time worrying about what they should and should not have to do that they don't worry about what would actually just fix the problem in the
right.
first place.
I agree with that. I think that's a fair assessment because, there's an old phrase, would you rather be right or happy? And a lot of us will get stuck in a conversation or in an argument where it's more important for us to be right. You know, we've been arguing so long, we almost forgot the root of it. And when we realize we may have been wrong or that the conversation, you know, the fight was unnecessary in the first place, stepping outside the circle of it becomes a point where your own ego enters into it. And you've got to be right, even if it means you're wrong, even if it means it doesn't solve the problem or communicate what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. It becomes an ego thing. And the right is really big on that. Yeah. I mean, we certainly have our, the patchouli stankers on our side and the left that will not let go. They'll be dog with a bone with an issue. And I appreciate to some degree on both sides their really fervent belief. But at a certain point, you have to go, I don't care what happened before. We need to worry about what's going to happen going forward.
Yeah.
So
I heard a science guy on a documentary one time say that we should be using the scientific method for all our policies. If they don't work after so long, then boom, obviously we need to find a different way to do things.
Right, and he was immediately defunded by the Republican Party because that was a refutation of trickle-down economics, I would suppose.
That and the war on drugs.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much, Josh, for calling in and using substantive issues to tacitly hit on Jackie. Let's go to Mark in Chicago. Hey, Mark.
Good morning.
Are you listening on WCPT Radio, Chicago's progressive talk?
I am listening to WCPT.
That's great.
That's how I get to work and get home every day.
That's great.
And I listen when I'm driving around. The thing that I'm a conservative, I would say almost Republican, not quite. But what I appreciate the most about progressives is that they truly believe in and live a benevolent lifestyle and ideology. That's what I try to communicate to my children. I have, you know, teenage mm-hmm. children that listen. This is like you kind of said. It's really not. Arguing is if you're going to argue, make sure it's to have a good outcome.
Right.
And what happens when we listen to the Palestinian and Israeli debate is we can't even fathom it. We can't even understand. You know, we live in Chicago where it's the most diverse yet the most polarized place in America. It's still wonderful and beautiful that people can live in their cultures here without the trouble and strife. Yes. And when we hear what's going on in there and we see a president as really, basically, as wonderful as our president is, no, I did not vote for him, but I still think he's an incredibly awesome guy.
Right.
That he's doing his best. He has one of the best speeches ever on the issue. And, you know, he leaves, comes back to America, and they're still going to be the way they are.
Right.
And it's not that we should let them work this out the way they're going to work it out, because I worked with a bunch of guys that were from Iran, and they called themselves Persian, and we would be talking phenomenally awesome people, love this country.
Right.
We talk about Israel, and they're like, no, Israel's got to go. Right. I'm like, well, why? I mean,
right.
Why? No, they got to go. They push them into the sea. And I just sit there stunned, because these were wonderful, ultra-educated, professional people that just had a culture and an ideology that we can't shake.
Well, ultimately, it's no matter, you know, that's the unfortunate part of holding on to an argumentative point of view beyond the solution itself, is that, and that's why a lot of major changes, positive changes, are generational, quite frankly, because, like I was saying before, bigotry is harder to pass on to your kid if they don't have a material experience of the reason for the bigotry. The slaveholder can talk himself into black people are subservient because that's his experience of it. Once the law is passed and they can no longer be slaves, it's harder for his son to argue that point because he no longer has people forced to work below him and therefore he can't answer it. Four or five generations down the line, it gets harder and harder to beat that into your kid's head.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're finding is the youth of Israel, the youth of Palestinians and the youth, the Iranian youth. I mean, look at who was running in the streets. They were wearing Rockin' Republic jeans. And the majority of that country, because of the amount of warning that was going on, were barely 30 now, you know, mid 30s at the oldest because of how many people were killed. And the Jasmine Revolution, as it's called, the uprising in the Middle East, a lot of that has to do with the fact that the older guard, because of just the amount of warring, is dying off.
I noticed that, you know, you and I differ on many, many, many things, but if we were at a place where we're sitting at a dinner table together at a big function and we're talking,
right.
Then we notice that we both like grapes, we both like this certain type of food, we both like this certain type of sports, and you're looking and thinking, I'm supposed to hate this guy because
right.
he's a lefty and I'm a righty, but I just don't feel any, I don't even feel any animosity, I actually feel a kinship.
Right.
I mean, how do we get the ultra, you know, the ultra orthodox in Israel to just say, look, you can live your lives until you're 105, die a peaceful death, watch out your family, and then tell the Hezbollah and the Hamas guys, you can live the rest of your life, you know, die at 102, watch all of your children grow up, and without hating and killing each other. How do we?
I don't know that you do because it's so entrenched.
Well, again, though, the entrenchment comes from habitual beliefs and habitual behavior. Ultimately, in any situation where you're like that, that's what we call tradition a lot. The positive word for cultural habit is tradition. And unfortunately, a lot of traditions were incredibly damaging to members of society who were disenfranchised or left out in the cold by it. And then the systematic disenfranchisement of those people meant that they were... If you and I are both putting out 100% effort, but you're only getting 70% return on that 100% effort,
But some are intensely beautiful, though. And I've been in homes of my Muslim friends, and when you're in their house, you feel like you're the only person on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they go out of their way to make you feel, you know, is there water filled? Is there anything you need to eat? Is the music too loud? I mean, it's an amazing experience. Same when you're with your Jewish friends, they're the same beauty. And
right.
with your progressive friends, with your liberal friends, and yes, some of my conservative friends, when you actually experience people as people,
yes,
it's a whole different thing. And I think that's where people like you know, our culture, even as I mean, I'm a conservative, but I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't want you to live like me if you don't want me to live like you.
Well, then no, I think you actually fall more in the libertarian realm of things in the truest sense. Yeah.
Libertarianism can sometimes become libertine and almost licentious, and that's where I recoil
understood.
When it comes to libertarianism. So
I think you can maintain moral values and be laissez-faire about government intervention and those kind of things. That's what I'm talking about.
I don't fear anything that the left is doing, because I mean 99% of the people I work with are, you know, extreme leftists, and mm-hmm. they're about the most wonderful people I've ever known.
Right.
They have no desire to try and change my, you know, my religious views or my faith-based,
yeah.
You know, way I see life. They're basically like, hey, dude, that's you, and this is us. What do you want for lunch?
Yeah.
You know, do you want the rice or did you want the potatoes?
Exactly.
And that's where I think
we need to get.
Sometimes aging is sometimes fun if you let yourself, if you allow yourself to enjoy other people for just being what they are,
mm-hmm.
people just like you. You know, so I'm sure when you stub your toe, you say ouch. When I stub my toe,
right.
I say ouch. And I hope your toe's not broken. And I think you hope my toe's not broken.
Yes, exactly.
And I think with what President Obama needs to hear from people like us, from people like me, we really appreciate what he's doing. We really appreciate the way that he speaks for America and for, mm-hmm. you know, us. But gosh darn it, I just think that sometimes we need to realize that people are not really understanding where we come from, because we cannot understand where they come from.
Sure.
And that's where that Israeli-Palestinian thing is heartbreaking.
Right. Well, and again, I think that's where and somebody just mentioned this again on Twitter, but, you know, Gandhi initially, you know, basically saying there is no way to peace. Peace is the way itself. And
yeah, but Gandhi was killed by his own religionist. I mean, he was killed by someone of his own religion.
But that's what I mean. That's no indication of the rest of the religion. You know what I mean? You know, Ku Klux Klan is technically a Christian organization, but I'm not going to group Christians in based on the behavior of those, you know, those people who use that as a tool to either recruit or give themselves some a gravitas they don't earn. There will always be the extremities who believe, you know, in any, you know, societal situation, you know, in any group of people, there will be your outliers who take what is said, what is spoken of in a group of people, whether, you know, we agree that scientific method is a very important approach to dealing with things, and then other people will push that to eugenics.
Right.
Can't save everybody, yeah. And why should you try? And right. That's not, that can't be indicative of all scientists anymore than, you know. But his whole point was, and the root of the religion he was, you know, coming from, and I wouldn't even, you know, limit it to Hinduism or the root belief system of that. I think it was a general humanist belief that we're all under, you know, there are many paths to God and you can choose your own. But the ultimate thing is, until we are peaceful with each other, we could never find the real path. And the best way to be an example for your belief system is to live in it in a peaceful sense and in spite of the fact that others might not live that way. And so when you have
I'm sorry, I call these kind of talk shows because I do believe, like yeah. Gandhi said, you know, Jesus is wonderful, but the people who say they're Christians are not really represented.
Right, yeah, some of his followers scare me to death. Right.
I would like to call myself a progressive Christian, but I'm an Orthodox Christian, and that it's time for Christians to stop being political and trying to force people to be a Christian is idiocy. And it just
we should live by example. Any, especially anything where the reward is in the hereafter, and God has said things like, "Vengeance is mine," saith the Lord. Don't take up a knife on my behalf; I'll take care of it. You have to live at the highest example of the best of mankind to show that you are, you know, a loyal child of mine. That is an appreciated behavior system that I think is totally undersold in the modern Christian world, which is unfortunate. We this conversation went super long. We went almost 5 minutes past when we were supposed to take a break because it was such a good talk, and
amazing.
I appreciate it. We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. And to the annoyance of other radio hosts in the building, our phone lines are blowing up.
Awesomeness.
Phones that calls about you and how wonderful you are.
Don't bother.
And calls about Israel and healthcare and you know, Tea Party versus Palestinians. It's amazing. We'll be back right after this.
Wow. I don't believe it. This is too good to be real. Of course this is real.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
To the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, and this is the only song we played the entire week that Jackie Schechner knew.
I did.
And what's it called, Tony? Beautiful People. Beautiful People.
It's Marilyn Manson.
Marilyn Manson, Beautiful People.
Who's from South Florida.
Oh, I see. So it's a geographic thing, not the fact that you just have like a Google alert for anything that says Beautiful People in it. So you have a spinning song that you can relate to. I get it. No. And believe me, you're not alone in that. Let's go to Gail in Syracuse. Hi, Gail.
Hi, Al. I just wanted to let y'all know, I have so enjoyed you this week.
Oh, thank
the last
you.
Time Jackie went on vacation and nobody was filling in, I went crazy.
Oh.
I'm addicted to y'all, and I've been waiting. I've been wanting to say this even before Hal asked for people to call in.
Oh, that's great.
And one final note, that conservative guy was a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
My goodness. Yes.
Well, the genuine conservative ideas, I think he comes, honestly, his idea of conservatism is a genuine Christianity. And so I think he decides that because, the Republicans have been better at branding themselves Christians, whereas there are a lot of progressive Christians and a lot of Democratic Christians across the board.
But we just don't wave
it because we don't want other people to feel like their religion is less than, so we keep that to ourselves most of the time, you know, whatever your religious base is. But the nice thing was he was very respectful, and he's listening for the words and the meaning of them, no matter who says them, which is very healthy.
Oh, yes, it is. You know, speaking about, you know, Christians, I'm one of them, you know, progressive leaning. I'm basically a left-leaning moderate, you know, and, you know, the Christians, you know, the hardline ones, you know, like Michelle Bachmann, who's way off in crazy land, you know, I look at them and it's like, my God, when was the last time they read their Bible? You know, everything that they're proposing is nothing in the Gospels that Jesus taught.
Right.
And
it makes me ashamed as a Christian.
Well, it's funny because first of all, it shouldn't, Gail. Just because people you know usurp the name of something you like doesn't mean that they deserve to be lumped in with everybody else. And that's a very important line we need to draw, that the extremities in any kind of situation that are damaging or dangerous to the rest of society or hurtful or hateful are no indication of the rest of people. And if we do that, we give them much more tacit strength than they deserve. Thank you so much for the call. And I don't know why she would say Michelle Bachmann is crazy.
We should play the latest Michelle Bachmann crazy.
Let's repeal this failure before it literally kills women, kills children, kills senior citizens. Let's not do that. Let's love people. Let's care about people.
She's starting to sound like Marcus.
I'm quite sure they will say so.
You are a crazy person. Wow. Well, we're going to take a break in a minute, and we'll be back with more of your calls. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number.
Can we talk about the crazy? Can we discuss the Bachmann crazy?
Oh, yeah. We're going to discuss health care. We're going to get some more of your calls. 1-800-STEPH-12 is the number. I'm Hal Sparks, by the way, at Hal Sparks on Twitter and stageit.com/Hal Sparks. Sign up. The shows are up online now for this weekend, Sunday, 7 and 7:30. It's the same show, but on Stage It, you divide them in half. tell your friends that the tickets are now available. It's great. And you can watch from your laptop. It's a live show. It's very exciting. It's the new wave. We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. The Stephanie Miller Show.
That.
Yeah, I thought you might.
I did.
It's
I
very
like
spinning
lot.
Music.
Yeah, you keep it up, I'm going to make you come to a spin class.
I've been. I can
Are
do
you
it.
Been? Yeah.
It's right up there with Bikram yoga for me. Like, I think it's something you should do occasionally, but not with the harsh regularity of the sociopaths that tend to do it day after day after day.
I don't
after
do it day.
Day
after day.
I didn't call you a sociopath. I didn't even assume
off.
That you did it that way.
I take a day off.
Right. Yeah. So that you can go to a Bikram yoga class.
So I can jog.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, no. by the way, in some news that I wanted to cover, there was of course, Colorado's top prison official. Was shot in his front door. He opened his front door and someone shot him. And that person was on the loose up until last night.
Ran in Texas.
Yes, a white supremacist ex-convict suspected of killing Colorado's top prison official is brain dead and on life support after being shot in the head during a rampage in Texas that left one officer seriously injured, according to CBS News. This is fascinating because this guy thought this through. Again, another case for... If we could only have captured him alive to get what was going on. But his name is Evan Spencer Ebell, and he's 28. He was spotted in Montague County, Texas, driving a Cadillac matching the description of the one that was spotted near the home of the Colorado Corrections Chief Tom Clements on the night he was murdered. Deputy James Boyd tried to pull him over. Ebell allegedly opened fire, shooting Boyd three times.
Oof.
There was a high-speed chase. Ebell wrecked his Cadillac, exchanged more gunfire with police at a busy intersection in Decatur, Texas, less than an hour north of Fort Worth. He was shot in the head during the exchange and remains on life support. Ebell, according to the Denver Post, Ebell is a member of a Colorado white supremacist prison gang called the 211s, named after a Colorado police criminal code for theft. Police are investigating whether the gang ordered him to murder Clements, noting Ebell's criminal record includes a charge of assaulting a corrections officer.
Oh.
Although, if you've been in prison for any length of time, there's tons of guys who have that. I mean, I don't necessarily think that helps the chain of figuring out how this happened.
What do you mean, having an assault against a prison officer? Yeah.
Anybody who acts up or doesn't go quietly at certain times can have that charge put against them because it's a way of denying privileges and putting them in a hole and those kind of things like that. It's pretty common, especially as, not related to this guy necessarily. He seems like a genuinely awful person. But a lot of people in our machinery of our prison industrial complex, as it is, those kind of things are used regularly to stack charges while somebody is in jail so that they can... basically siphon money from the state off them for a longer time. A Domino's pizza uniform and an empty pizza box was found in the vehicle, led authorities to a suspect that Ebell may have been involved in the murder of Nathan Leon, a delivery driver who was found dead recently in Golden, Colorado. Police sources told Fox 31 Denver that the disguise may have been used to trick Clements into
opening the
his
door.
Front door.
Aye.
Yeah. There has been... a third teen charged in the Torrington High School sexual assault investigation is another after the Steubenville case. There's been some other reports of actual cases being brought before judges now of rape allegations against high school football guys that may have been being swept aside, but the attention of Steubenville is actually causing people to take a second look or go.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yes, it is. We
have to make sure that the victims or alleged victims feel comfortable enough to come forward, and that's
beyond comfort, safe.
Well, that's what I mean, but comfortable in a safety factor, because I think that's part of the problem.
In Steubenville, they actually arrested two girls for death threats against
Twitter.
Yes,
Facebook,
against the
right?
victim themselves. Now, let's get to...
And also the media not making the error or releasing the name. I mean, that's also part of the problem, too, is that they should make sure to protect
right.
these victims or alleged victims right. by not releasing their names.
And by the way, in a few minutes, we're going to have my buddy Johnny Million calling in. He's he's normally in my sidecar when we do the Hal Sparks radio program, Mega Worldwide, on Saturdays on WCPT Radio in Chicago, but, of course, available on the interwebs and on Ustream. I stream it at my Facebook page at Hal Sparks, the Hal Sparks Fang page, F-A-N-G, on Facebook. So you can watch it there, or you can go to HalSparks.com.
Now, for people who aren't familiar, is it like what we're doing this week?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I get to go deeper in topic, which is great because it's, you know, I take calls.
You go
but
deep undercover.
Deep undercover. People go, they go, where's, they're not even going to be able to tell us, I'm going to be, can I have my requisition from a Flash Money? Anybody know what that is? Call in 1-800-STEF-12. So, I love that you went to that reference. That's great.
I'm older than I look.
Yeah. And the Tony Scott movie, sorely missed, Tony Scott. So, let's take some of these calls because there's a bunch of people, calling in on these and we've got, about 5 minutes before we need to take a break. I'll go into, let's go to Joe in Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Hal, you were great in Extract.
Well, thank you. You know, when we shot that scene, we didn't even know where it was going to be in the movie.
Is Marla as beautiful in person as she is on TV?
She is. She absolutely is. She's a lovely person. But she's not my type, so I was immune enough to her, like, her feminine wiles to, like, watch everybody else around me
who
fall.
Was
Mila Kunis. Who,
okay.
She's in Extract, and we did a scene together. It was me and Nick Thune, and Mike Judge directed... Yes?
What about Mila Kunis makes her not your type?
Just, I don't know. What makes, like, there's an auto-attraction factor in somebody that just kind of does it, and it's just not there for me. It's kind of like Halle Berry. I find Halle Berry to be amazingly gorgeous, but she's not sexy to me. Other guys will go,
oh,
she's
okay.
overwhelming.
The difference between hot and sexy.
Right.
Okay.
And that doesn't mean they're not sexy, just not
for you.
How I roll. So, but I will not argue with their beauty. Absolutely not. And
well, there's
Mila's,
a difference between beautiful and
she's, Mila's both beautiful and lovely. But, well, I digress.
Okay,
point
sorry.
Being is that we...
I'm just curious
that,
what makes Mila Kunis not your type.
That scene was... I didn't know when we shot it where it opened the film. But
oh,
I didn't
did.
Know what to do. Anyway, so go ahead. Joe, you wanted to talk about Israel. Because
well,
it's...
I'm probably going to maybe upset some people, but... My wife's Palestinian. She's from Ramallah.
Uh-huh.
And my son will be half Palestinian.
Sure.
I get a lot of different, the opposing side, which is not the, you know, the AIPAC really controls politicians and they control the media here in America. And something I'd like to illuminate the, America or the audience, your audience or whatever, is the fact that, you know, basically the crux of this whole thing, it's a land grab. And if you follow the maps from when Israel took over and to today and the slow bleeding of the land that's being stolen from the Palestinians and the concentration camps in Gaza, is basically that over time they want it all. They're running out of land. And the way the Israelis work is if you can prove, if you're Russian or you're Polish or whatever, and you're Jewish, you can come to Israel and get a free place to stay.
Mm-hmm.
It's that right of rescission or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that they're running out of room. And you don't even need to be Jewish, per se. You could pay off a rabbi in Russia. And 10 grand will get you... proof from a rabbi saying that you're Jewish and you can move to Israel.
Right. Well, I certainly I agree with you on the land issue because, quite frankly, almost every situation of territorial dispute, even if it's based on the idea of religion or the idea of, you know, look at the Native American push. We'll give you this section of land, but you can't hunt off of it. Okay, there's too much hunting on that land. That's good hunting. You know what? You guys need to move back a little bit. And then eventually you're just in a desert valley filled with uranium and there's nothing to eat. And it's systemically it occurs no matter where, even if the initial belief was good, eventually, you know, it's that absolute power corrupting absolutely, and the idea that if you have control over a space or you have the, you know, enough of a backing, you can start all sorts of other interests allow you an extra 2%. And actually, you know, the religious believers who believe that Israel has a right to exist because it's a holy land and that's why they want to be there and they believe it's the home of the Jewish people end up being almost an 80-20 rule there. Let's say 80% of the population of that area. And then there's enough other reasons to want more land in Israel for the tourist industry because of the people who don't want to live there but want to go back to the land, to the need to get certain land so you get waterways, so you can feed into that area, hotel space. Then we go into beachfront property. Once you look at how where the actual land that they're kind of fighting for is actually the, you know, almost a Mediterranean, you know, beachfront, you know, like Brazil or any other part. It's a beautiful area. There's enough of a percentage of other people willing to act on the root of the 80% of people who believe, you know, that they should peacefully exist and not harm the Palestinians, have a two-state solution. All that. Mm-hmm. The 20% is made up of 1% of real estate developers, 1% of people who are Zionist Christians who want Jews to be killed and, you know, the Bachmans and Sarah Palins
not
of the world.
Not all one reason.
Right, that's what
There's
I mean.
A variety
and
of reasons.
And that is enough. That encroachment is what can cause the squeeze. And that encroachment, instead of being called out for those individual encroachments, those people who do that live under the cover of the legitimate 80% part that's going on. That's the unfortunate part. And that's where we really need to have the conversation. I appreciate you bringing that up, Joe, because people get afraid to have that conversation about it because of the appearance of anti-Semitism, the appearance of a certain belief system. I will say that when you say AIPAC controls the media or AIPAC controls the conversation, there's no question that they, sort of like the NRA, have a control point and a visibility point with a certain segment of voters that scares certain politicians into behavior regardless of the reach. The NRA's actual reach is very inflated and full of crap. And to some degree, I think a majority of Americans kind of view AIPAC as any other lobbying group for a group, and they don't feel like, oh, my God, if you turn against AIPAC, you turn against the Israeli people or Jews or whatever. But they can use that belief to control it. Right.
If you speak out, Helen Thomas, Cynthia McKinney, if you speak out.
But see, I don't think that's strictly AIPAC cutting it down. I will say that what it is, and it's much more difficult thing. If it was simply AIPAC, you could go and confront them and pick at them and go, look, you guys aren't sharing both sides of the issues, and it would be a direct confrontation. You could actually have the conversation. The reality is that it's this hinge in the back of people's minds all over the place that aren't directly related to AIPAC in the media and outside the media that if you criticize, you are somehow forgetting the Holocaust
but
or something like that. It's there.
People know AIPAC the way they know the NRA? Like, do you think it's as well known what it is and
well, it doesn't get as much press, but it doesn't get as much bad press. One of the reasons why the NRA is so known is A, because how long it's been around. It predates the existence of Israel, for example, and it's I appreciate the call, Joe. I want to make sure we take a break because we're right up, you know, again, we'll drift breaks everywhere, and Johnny will be joining us at it looks like at the top of the hour, so okay. I'm going to have him come in then. It is totally possible to conflate the needs and wants of AIPAC with the needs and wants of the right wing of the Israeli government and the desire for that, or, you know, even moderates within it. But the point is, it's okay to look at it as a governmental lobbying agency for the governmental actions of Israel and not honestly criticize the people of Israel who don't believe in what the increased settlements and those kind of things.
And that's the analogy you're making with regard to the NRA and the members.
Right.
Not necessarily having the same.
Exactly.
Goals.
Most NRA members, for example, support background checks.
Right.
By a large margin.
Except Wayne LaPierre keeps getting up and saying how it's a.
They have no interest in it.
A real.
And AIPAC will talk up and down.
Backdoor to registration.
About how Iran and certain Middle Eastern extremists want the destruction of Israel and want it wiped off the map. These are things that are absolutely true. But they're not reflective of the majority opinion of Muslims throughout the world, really. Not really, nor any more than they are of Hindus or Buddhists or Christians in the world. And it's been Christians, right-wing Zionist Christians, who've wanted to, you know, been trying. One of the big security stories of Israel is that they keep trying to get a nuke that they can detonate within range of the Temple on the Mount so they can be returned to Jewish hands and then bring about the existence of Christ and all this kind of stuff. And this has been a security threat that they've had to deal with. That's from super right-wing Christians. But we don't hear about that part because it's just, it's too odd to wrap your head around almost for some people. It sounds conspiratorial, but it's true.
Well, that's part of the problem, too, is that the whole issue is, you were talking about being too deep, right?
Yep.
It just gets too big, and instead
so
of
you need
to
back off at a certain point and go, I don't care. It's not that I'm going to forgive crimes, and people may be brought up on charges later for, you know, murdering Palestinians or murdering Jews at some point. That's fine, but that has to be handled in the context of what's going on. But the rest of us have to start operating like, how are we going to live 500 years from now when this is all behind us and we look back and go, this was crazy? We'll be back right after this. It's 1-800-STEF-12 is our number. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about Bachman and Obamacare.
Aha.
Healthcare. I want to talk about the value of healthcare.
I love it.
We'll be back.
What in the name of holy hell is going on here?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
A little more light, I need a lot more focus. Like a silver action, I'm looking for more performance from the actors. I cast it, I'm committed and I'm here for the long haul. This is my world, growing and I am.
So, you better get MacArthur Park ready. Try to look up that song right now, or what is it, Magnolia? What's a good 70s song?
What are you talking about?
I'm asking for a specific, this is for Tony. Welcome back to the show, by the way. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in. And I just need a song from, like, yeah, something like that, like MacArthur Park. Can you look up that one, Tony? Or okay. Someone Left the Cake Out in the Rain? Anybody?
Yeah.
What is that?
All right. Moving along.
Something. Trust me, because Deb in California is upset with us, I think, for that. Hi, Deb in California.
Hey there, sweetie. How are you guys doing?
I'm good.
Hi.
I'm glad you're having a really good week.
We are.
Aren't you?
I said, yeah, we are.
Seems like you are.
Yes.
Seems like you are. Anyway, and MacArthur Park, hey, nothing wrong with the 70s.
I agree.
And, so the thing is, I was calling because of all the weird, unfair crap, you know, that's going on.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand why, I always say what we need to do. Whenever I call the Steffi Show,
uh-huh,
I say what we need to do. And it's so much more than what we need, and I always sound like a cheerleader. But the issue is that the liberals need to get up off their petunias.
Mm-hmm.
Get up, call these people. You're being begged by the president to call.
Right.
Liberals are being begged.
Call your member of Congress.
Right. Or
call
yeah.
the media also. Been noticing that
call
if I
Chuck
call...
Call Chuck Todd. Ask Chuck Todd a question. MSNBC is doing an Ask...
No.
Yes, they are. They're doing
oh,
an Ask
horrible.
Chuck Todd a question.
I think it's on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
Ask Chuck.
Well, ask him why he has a NASCAR beard. Why
well,
does
I'd
he
like
have a NASCAR
know.
Goatee? It is the kind of goatee
like
when you're wearing cans and a mic. Yeah.
And who did he blow to get four claps?
Simmer down.
Whoa,
oh, we got to dump that. Sorry. Whoops.
Whoa.
That didn't happen. Nobody heard that. That didn't happen.
Uh-oh.
We're back after a... Well, you know, it's interesting how fast and loose we feel like we are with language. And then... when somebody actually is, you're like, actually, I've been fairly well behaved.
Yeah. A little good self-editing
yes.
going on there.
This, let's go. Let's. It, the problem is when you're dealing with, yeah, the problem with when you're dealing with topics like this, it's hard not to get worked up and use an untoward phrase or word.
Sure.
So I don't fault people for that at all. Because in normal parking lot conversation, you'd be up and down about language like that and that kind of stuff. I mean, not that it was super harsh, but
no.
It was not radio friendly.
It slips out from time to time.
Yeah. Let's go to Dana in Maryland. She loved, I'm sure, the Bachman quote. Hi, Dana.
I totally loved it. Yeah, no, rock on, last caller. That was good. First of all, Hal, I want to tell you, you are on my laminated hall pass.
Oh, thanks.
So, yeah, you're one of the top ones. And, Tony, I love how you snuck in the Love and Rockets. That was good.
Yep.
And
hurry up, we only got a minute before we go break.
I'm going to see Tony Danko or...
Danko Jones.
Danko Jones, yes. I'm going in Baltimore.
Good.
To see
yes.
them. Okay, so Michelle Bachmann, I think that they are like grifters. I think that they take advantage of desperate people with their Pray the Gay Away clinic.
I think you're absolutely right. Sorry, we can't go long on this because we got to take a break. But you're absolutely right. And interestingly enough, I don't know if you saw this, but you know who's been warning people against listening to preachers who scamsters? This is the quote: scamsters in religious garb quoting the Bible.
Chris Christie?
No, you know who's warning people about that?
Who?
I love this. Pat Robertson.
Oh.
Who, by the way, just 2 days ago. And this is, you know, this is on Raw Story and a couple other places or whatever. Just ask people to, if you're bankrupt, if you're losing your house or whatever, you only have to send in $20 a month to him. This is,
There was something with Chris Christie and gay conversion therapy. That's what I was referring to. I thought you were going there.
No, I don't think those two go together.
No. When we are, okay.
I think it's more like that giant Big Gulp ban in New York and stuff. But we'll be back right after this because we're right up against the tail.
Against gay therapy.
Yeah. Well, he finally said it?
Yeah.
We'll talk after we come back. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It does feel good, but it's slightly melancholy. This is our last hour of the week. Yeah,
am I going to do with myself?
Oh, my gosh. I have some ideas. But one of them includes coming on my show, the House Parks Radio program, Mega Worldwide, this Saturday, maybe tomorrow. If you're up for it, you can call in, visit, whatever. You might be in a spinning class.
There is a little bit of a spinning. I could come early. I could come before class, right?
There you go. And then you could head straight there. Yeah. We're neighbors. We're not too far from each other. So it'll work out. And then, of course... I want to say, by the way, before we get too far down into the stories that we want to crowbar into the last hour and get to the calls, 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. Thanks, Tony, for coming in and getting up early.
Amazing.
If you bothered to sleep at all, which I don't.
Actually, I've been pretty good this week. I actually have slept.
That's great. That's only because your neighbor has an elephant gun that uses.
It's because I'm not filling in for everybody else here. Because usually when I'm on this, I'm filling in over there and doing something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he runs.
I'm doing just one job this week, which is awesome.
That's weird. George, what you say? Uniquely un-American. Only having one job.
Well, your job this week is to teach me about new music.
Yeah.
That's a full-time job.
That in and of itself.
It's a job.
Well done.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah. Have you got any Charlie Daniels Band? If you do, don't play it. and, of course, Rebecca Taylor, the lovely...
amazing.
RBT, as we like to call her, Rebecca Baker Taylor. She, after, taking time off from working with Steph to focus on her family, in the real sense, not the focus on the family thing, which is apparently to focus on other people's attempts to have a family and shut it down.
Speaking of focus on the family, when I was in Hagerstown, Maryland, 1,000 years ago, working as a sports reporter, we used to take the focus on the family feed. They used to feed these packages, like these little 2-minute packages, and roll them as part of the news. It was in the newscast.
Of course,
it was like...
Oh, they patch in all kinds of things. There's on radio all across this country, on these right-wing stations especially, they have these little focus on the family moments.
Yeah, that's what it was.
It's one of those, like, you don't realize it's a commercial until it's too late. And they legally said, the following is a paid advertisement. They don't have to do that with Focus on the Family because it's considered a social action group or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was at the time.
Right.
This was a long time ago, and it wasn't my choice.
You're getting on a tangent at the effect of...
Shut up and never say anything again as long as you live.
She's giving me that look again. Rebecca is has got a great Instagram account. And she wants people to sign on there and join it. Because I'm obviously big on Twitter, at House Sparks. You can go to the Facebook House Sparks Fang page. You can go to, you can follow Jackie Schechner. Any spelling will do. I think she has to own all of them.
It's just at Jackie Schechner, and then there's Facebook.
If you need to find it and just follow because you can't type it, just go to my feed, and I will make sure that I retweet regularly from her. And you just
sweetheart,
you can barnacle on
to
there.
Being nice to me now.
But Rebecca has an Instagram thing, so just look up Rebecca, spelled the biblical way,
R-E-K-A-H. Okay.
Baker Taylor. two separate.
A lot of selfies. Huh? She do a lot of selfies.
I hope so. I hope so.
A lot of hot selfies.
A lot of high, lift them up high and take a down picture of yourself so that you look slimmer because of the perspective shot. Of she doesn't need that, but it's always fun and it's always a dead giveaway. Okay, so here's a couple stories that I want to lead off the hour with that I think are really important. And Johnny Million from the Hal Sparks radio program Mega Worldwide will be joining us at the half hour to basically blow up, because he and I get on the air sometimes and we just, it's almost hard to talk because you get so flabbergasted by this. So this story comes out that Cyprus is rejecting the bailout tax that tied to its bailout from the European Union is that they were going to go through everybody's savings account and issue a tax of like 200 and some odd bucks per, you know, thousand that you have or some ridiculous thing. Because it was a little watery. But the idea that they could go into your savings account and just kind of skim to pay for this is nuts. Now, flashback a few weeks ago to the IMF coming out and having this mea culpa where they said, you know what, that whole thing about austerity that we were pushing ruined economies. It was the dumbest thing we could have asked for. And on top of that, the real story behind Greece being that the assumption around the world has been that Greece got into a big financial problem. They were paying, you know, too many social entitlement, you know, payments to their people. They got under it. They borrowed money to cover it. And then they got in too deep and it almost capsized their economy and they needed a bailout to fix this. And then they got the bailout money and then somehow it didn't fix things because we're going to become Greece like them and that's how.
Right. That's all you kept hearing.
We're
going to
be Greece. We're going to be Greece. And it's even in the Ryan budget. He put in a little point where we become Greece at this point. It's ridiculous.
The magical mystery budget.
Because it's the GDP versus debt idea, which is stupid. So you find out the real story behind Greece, which is, again, not to get too much like our dear friend Lee Camp, where you just start to lose your mind and try to remain funny, but at the same time, like, what the hell? The Greece bailout was based on the idea, we'll give you this money, but you have to cut your social entitlements. You have to cut them. You must, and we'll put this money.
That was the caveat.
We'll give you this, but you have to cut these ridiculous entitlement programs. Okay, we're going to give you this money, but you have to cut these programs.
Now, is it entitlement or is it social protection programs?
It was all kinds of stuff like that. It was unemployment insurance at a time when unemployment was very
really high.
It was, you know, their equivalent of medical payments. So it was crappy. But they agreed to it because they were in such dire straits. So the European Union says, okay, we're going to put this money, and you're going to do this? Yes. Okay, we're going to put this money in an escrow account. You can't touch it until you prove to us you've made these cuts. And you've made them for the long term. You put it in your budget. These are stuck in there. You're going to do it, right?
It's like holding the money hostage.
Right. The money's here, but we really want to see you do these cuts. Austerity on steroids for the Greek people. It's time they, you know, stop partying in the
bootstrap
sun. It's a time to grow up and join the European Union where everybody else is got to deal with snow. And, you know, you down there eating your stuffed grape leaves and your Mediterranean diet that makes you live longer and have rosy skin. We hate you and your olive oil. And you will cut everything of your social safety net because if you want this money to get, by the way you got into this first place was like every other country in the world. You looked at the United States stock market and Wall Street and said these are good investments and you were BS'd into buying A-grade mortgage securities that actually turned out to be Z minus grade ones, yeah, and they capsized, and it's not your fault, but you get suckered into that.
Okay.
So you're in debt, and they go, okay, we're going to give you this money, but you must cut these things. Okay, fine. We cut the things, we put it in the account. The account stayed in an escrow account. This, like, whatever, $300 billion bailout money sat in an escrow account.
How long?
3 days. And then it went right back to the banks that gave it to them. It never saw the Greek people at all.
When did they discover, like, when did the...
Immediately.
Who discovered? Government discovered getting this money?
Yeah, well, the government said, well, we did give it to you. It just went to the people you owe debt to, which is these big banks, because of the money that they screwed you out of doing this shell game that is mortgage securities. It was so messed up. Look it up. I mean, I don't even have to go that far. Now, this is the really screwy part.
I'm not giving you an I don't believe you look. I'm giving you an oh my God look.
It's nuts. So we know this. And believe me, the people in Cyprus know this. The government of Cyprus knows this. And after the IMF's mea culpa about this, going austerity is a stupid way to try and reinvigorate an economy, ask the Germans, the ones who felt the least of it, forcing austerity on other people while subsidizing their own auto industry to the tune of, don't fire, no, we're not going to even do unemployment insurance. Don't fire your workers. Keep them working because it's cheaper to just keep them on staff. We'll give you the money to let these people keep working.
That's how bad it austerity.
Yeah,
the concept.
They hate austerity so much that they don't even start the unemployment process where it can be cut. They just keep them working. Keep building cars, even if you're not profitable. We know it'll come around. Don't fire them and then rehire them because the bureaucracy of trying to pay them out is dumb. This is a better... We'll just support our national industries and keep everything flowing until the rest of the world comes back up to point.
Okay.
Which is a really good way to handle a situation like this because it's the equivalent of... of doing, you know, unemployment insurance and those things without all the extra bureaucracy and BS. So Cyprus is looking at this and going, here's what they told Greece to do, and this is what happened to Greece. This is, you know, the Greeks to do. This is what happened to Greece. No way. And we're certainly not going to let you go into our bank accounts and skim an untold amount.
That's the most amazing proposal. Oh. We're going to go into your bank account and take a tax off your savings. Do you know how fast people would run to the bank and take their money out?
Well, the banks are closed. They closed the banks in Cyprus to prevent that very thing, because a lot of these people thought it was going through. The banks, I think they were closed till Wednesday, if not still. But when all this was going down, they shut the banks so people wouldn't go and take their money out, because what idiot wouldn't?
Of course.
Because they didn't cause the debt. You know, that's...
And you don't have the right to tax my savings.
Well, and tax in abstract. It's to pay off banks that started this in the first place. It's bananas. So some people of Cyprus went, this is ridiculous. Now, when we come back from the break, I'm going to tell you how it got even worse and the idea that you would listen to anything insofar as how to jumpstart your economy from how the European Union and the IMF dictate things is stacked upon a criminal case that just came up this week. This is crazy business. I can't even... I'll tell you about it when we come back from the break, because we don't have time. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. And I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. Jackie Schechner, of course, keeping me honest and giving me that...
Shut up and never say anything again as long as you live.
Look, every time I get on too big a tangent. We'll be back right after this.
It's just implied, but we all know what's going on in this thought bubble. The kids don't know, but we do.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Train.
I'm not keeping notes. I should be keeping notes. I should.
Yeah. Step up and take your seat. It's to the left. I mean, come on.
Yes.
Last time aboard the train that goes around the world. This is our last hour. I mean.
You're making me sad. I'm
a
little bit of a crier.
Yeah.
I'm a last day of camp crying kind of person.
Me too.
Are you?
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm totally comfortable with my melancholy side. As a matter of fact, as a guy. Because I don't get the opportunity to cry openly, if I start crying about something, I will look for other things to cry about just to get them in. So if a sad movie makes me cry,
yeah.
I'll start going, what was that book that made me cry? Let's play that song that makes me cry every time. Like, just let's get it going. Let's get a good cry on.
That feels so good,
I don't
though.
Know when the problem is I often get deliveries while that's happening. Yeah, you go to the door and you're weeping and they've got a package for you. And
people know who you are,
and you're
too.
Sobbing horribly and you have to go, the kidney's arrived, I'm going to live. And you slam the door and take the box and go inside. Quick, get the table ready. You know, and then they hope that
if you're not a crier, I don't think you appreciate what that feels like. But a good cry, like that good, deep.
Well, it's actually, medically, and I'm willing to be corrected on this, but I think it's one of the only ways you can release certain toxins from the body.
Really?
There are certain toxins that only really come out healthfully. Obviously, you can cut yourself and all kinds of things will come out, unfortunately. But tears are actually a great way to get rid of certain toxins, and it's why it builds up over things.
You'd think with all the sweating I do and spin and jog that it would just
not the same. It doesn't work, even though it's the kind of salty zone of,
that's what I was thinking.
That's a saline aspect that has nothing to do with. Yeah, that's. But here's the thing. Okay, so before
all
the
right,
break,
sorry.
We're talking about the Greek bailout.
And this is really
bailout.
Fascinating. Like, it sounds very complicated, but the way that Hal's breaking it down is really incredibly infuriating and fascinating at the same time.
And you need to know this, that every time they say we're going to become Greece and they put austerity in the same thing, that's the plan. That the gutting and skimming of the money of the middle class and the American people is absolutely Paul Ryan's goal. It's these are not failures to them of the economic system. This is how the system is built. It is built to be a skimming thing where you take the cream off the top because the idiots keep producing it and it rises to the top. And the Greek economy issue is that here you have a small country that does very well and it's mostly tourist based and they certainly have some exports, but it's not, you know, you don't think of it as industrial hub or any of those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And they take some of their money from their retirement accounts that they do because they create a social safety net like Social Security for their people, and they invested in things so that their return on it is high enough that if it was just a savings account kind of situation, the return wouldn't be enough for the aging population and those kind of things.
Okay.
And because of the Mediterranean diet being as wonderful for the body, ask Andrew Weil, that it is. They live a lot longer there, so you're going to need it. And so they invested in securities and things that are safe but higher return investments.
A higher yield.
One of them being mortgages. One of them being land.
And so
land,
they got caught up in our
right.
crappy
exactly.
Wall Street
they got sold.
Scam.
Yeah, they amongst other people, including pension schemes across the country right. and across the world, got sold this bill of goods. You can bet your money on these mortgage securities because they're not going anywhere. These are A-rated and they were all based on what the Chinese would call feng pi. And which is
what does that mean?
Means fart air. it means you can smell it, but there's no substance. And
oh,
the idea is
that
it's present. You're aware of its presence, but there's no substance to
okay.
it. Yeah. So and they regard our economy at certain times and elements of our economy as funky. They call it that.
Okay.
So the Greeks have money invested in this part of the area, and then it collapses.
Right.
And oh crap. We don't have enough for our social safety net for the aging retirees who are coming out. That was all the thing that was going across the world. It's a cascading effect. It's a ripple effect
okay.
of our stupid non-regulation of, we don't need cops because cops cause murder kind of idea. It's like that logic is
okay.
foolish and stupid. So the Greek austerity force happens. They go, here, you're going to have to cut these things to take this money, so we'll bail you out. And then the money, and this is the exact quote, in an elaborate payment system that began after the May 6 election that brought down the Greek government and is meant to ensure that the Greeks do not touch the cash, the big three creditors are now wiring bailout payments to an escrow account in Greece. There the money sits for 2 or 3 days before much of it is sent back to the Troika as interest payments on the Greek bonds that Europe accepted under the terms of the bailout deal struck in February. So you got to start paying us interest on something that hasn't even started working yet.
Okay, so when did they lend? They lent the money in February.
Right. And then and immediately, like within a month, it was, and that's why the crash.
Like this past February.
Yes.
Okay, so they lent the money in February, and now what they're doing is taking the money that's allegedly going to help the people.
No, this was last year. This is 2012.
Oh, this was last year.
Yeah,
okay.
This is 2012.
Okay.
And it happened immediately. That's what I'm saying. Like, and they're digging themselves out under this, and they still have to make these bailout payments. And is the,
but this is the interest on the money that was lent last
yeah,
year. This isn't even the money.
Before anything had actually happened. You're issuing bonds to, you know, as you would do, and you're now being forced to pay the interest payment on it before the benefit of the bonds have actuated. It's ridiculous.
But now they're just moving money around.
Right. American bonds, savings bonds and the kind of stuff, you start getting a payment back on those things after a maturity period. Meaning
right.
10 years, give us 10 years to build a highway with this, and then the benefits of the highway will pay back enough where we can start paying you the benefit. That's what's the point. But these guys dove on these interest payments right away before any of the effects there, before unemployment had been able to come around. It was gross. And what it is a manufactured skimming of this this middle-class country with a decent lifestyle. Just, they can't have that. Take
and
that
who
away.
Is doing this?
The
IMF?
Banks, the big banks and through the IMF.
Okay.
Now, here's the nuts part. This is what I'm getting to. Okay, so the IMF, like I said, comes to 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. If you're as mad about this, if you read any of Matt Taibbi's stuff about this, I mean, it's gut-wrenching. So the IMF is the people who came up with this thing about austerity and we need to cut back. Everything needs to be cut. Don't support the weak and downtrodden among you. You can't afford to do it. Cut and we'll give you some money to bail out and that's how it works. And it all failed and they admitted it. This week, anti-corruption police raided the home of the IMF chief, Christine Lagarde, after claims she authorized a 270 million pound payout to a convicted fraudster. This woman is going to be convicted. The head of the IMF, the chief, the IMF chief, is going to be prosecuted. They raided her home. Do you know what it would take to raid the home of the chief of the IMF? You know how, if you think the O.J. Simpson trial was difficult to get, you know, post that to get them to charge any celebrity with any major crime is, you know, nuts. But you know how much
head of the IMF.
You know how sure you have to be that there's guilt involved in this situation before you have the gall to actually raid the home of the International Monetary Fund's chief.
And they
that's like bringing Alan Greenspan out of his house in cuffs. That really is.
Oh, and they said she paid this money to whom?
She authorized a payment to this guy, and I'll read about it when we come back, because we don't have time to get into it. But it ties all together. This woman doesn't think 270 million billion pounds is money. She just thinks that that's what you shuffle around. We'll be back right after this. It's crazy. Right.
That's two.
Right. That's why that guy, of course you know that one. It's a skinny white girl rocking out. It's, they play this in spin classes. They do. They totally do.
Yeah, they have to.
By the way, on the line with us is my dear friend Johnny Million, who's been hanging on and finally got with us. Hey, John.
So,
hi.
So glad to have you on.
I can't believe I'm on the Stephanie Miller Show.
I know. It's a big deal.
It is.
Yeah. I think John and I reconnected after years. We were in high school together. We were actually in a band together in high school called Seismograph. That's
oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because that's the instrument that measures how rock moves. What's
right.
up?
And we had no idea how much we liked each other until we both realized that we knew all the words to every Kiss song.
Exactly. and I still stand by the fact that I like you more than you like me, no matter what, no matter how much you'll ever like me. I have so much respect for you as a guy and as a talent. All I'm going to say is facebook.com/convoyinsanity. so you've been listening to some of these, you know, these sound bites that have been going around this week. And of course we've had great conversations about the Israeli conversation that's been going on, with the president being down there. We're going to play stuff on the show tomorrow.
Right.
Dealing with this, especially that little off-script moment. And I wish we had that cut, but we'll have it tomorrow on the show.
You know what he's doing right now, Jackie, is giving me homework.
That's true. Yeah.
We are going to have that clip
tomorrow. Aren't we?
Aren't we, God?
Yes.
Better you than me, my love.
So it's funny, but like some of these, you know, like the Michelle Bachmann quote and those kind of things, we all kind of laugh at. But you recognize that this woman affects policy. She can stop things in their tracks. Does that?
Isn't she still on some intelligence committee?
Yeah, in a fit of total irony that we've not seen since Mark Foley was on the committee for missing and exploited children.
You made that up.
No, Mark Foley was Republicans, by the way, who knew he was doing this kind of stuff around pages for upwards of a decade. Put him on the committee.
That's not the committee, though.
For missing and exploited children. He was, yeah, he was on that. So, but regardless, you know, this is similar, I think, Michelle Bachmann being on.
Oh, easily.
In intelligence.
Or the rape is a gift from God guy being on the science committee. The women, the female body as a way of shutting that whole thing
down. Shutting that whole thing. Aiken.
Yes.
Todd Aiken.
Aiken.
Our friend Todd
wow.
Aiken.
Wow, isn't it awesome that we can barely remember his name?
Unfortunately, I can.
Well, she's gonna, most of the voting women in this country, yeah. It's burned into their skull, as it should be, quite frankly.
Yeah.
It should be, there should be a long memory because, by the way, past his prologue with these guys, this is, you know, his only mistake, if you listen to them, was saying it.
Uh-huh.
We've got to stop these guys from saying these things.
That is how they're trying to remake everything. You know, the whole rebranding of the Republican Party isn't about policy. it's about, like you've said before, a different pizza box, no matter how bad the pizza is.
Right. And Reince Priebus was on Morning Joe this morning. Did you catch it by any chance?
No, but I've got a feeling I might need to grab a clip from it now.
More
you did
homework.
Catch it. It's, yeah. It's almost like a Jedi mind trick. These are not the clips you're looking for. Move along.
I love how he talks like a disgruntled drunk sailor.
Yeah. Look, I meant, well, in this case, I want to say Mark Stein. Is that his name from
Who?
Huffington Post? It's going to drive me
Sam
crazy.
Stein.
Sam Stein. Thank you. Sam Stein from Huffington Post said, I have a question for you because they were talking about messaging versus policy. And he says, what would you say to a fiscally conservative person who viewed themselves as a Republican but viewed away from the Republican Party simply because they are gay and the issue of inequality and not the lack of support for marriage in the Republican Party, drives them away. And he goes, well, you know, it's kind of like I have a great marriage and my wife and I don't agree on everything. So, and I'm like, yeah, but you don't deny rights to your wife. I mean, maybe he does and maybe she's into that kind of thing, which, you know, knock yourself out. But because what you do in your home, fine. But once you legislate on that idea, the goofy part is that, you know, hey, sometimes I want pizza. Sometimes she wants a shoe up against her head. And, you know, and you go, wait a minute, those are two things you want.
Yeah, and you had a conversation with somebody, a caller, about this earlier this mm-hmm. week, about where he was saying that something you said was mm-hmm. scary, the way you put it about the Christians and their beliefs about homosexuality. And you had to point out that a belief is a belief, but you're not going out of your way to legislate against somebody else's rights.
As a matter of fact, you denigrate your own belief system if it's a morally based one by creating rules that support it in a legal sense, especially if it's non-property or life-related, where, you know, for example, like murder or theft or those kind of things, or, you know, removal of property without due process, those kind of things. The reason you need rules about that is because two people might have a different opinion that have nothing to do with your faith part of it. It's just like, hey, you can't have my stuff. But once you get into the area of, I think women should be forced to wear a cloth over the top of their head.
Yeah.
Well, I don't, and a lot of the women don't. So you can't take that belief and lay it over onto somebody in this country. That's not how it works. Right,
well, yeah,
or
and
does
I
it?
Still see I Sorry. Still bumper stickers as I'm driving around saying, fight for your religious freedom.
Oh, my God. Well, where's the...
It's here, the war on Christmas.
And, yeah, meets right. the creeping Sharia war on Christmas. So, I also...
They put up Christmas decorations at Thanksgiving. Like, it's not under attack.
Yeah, right.
We're good.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is the okay. creeping Sharia folks...
Yeah.
I would... With the exception of, I suppose, the belief about burkas and not...
Sounds like a disease, doesn't it?
A creeping
what
Sharia.
What do you have? I have creeping Sharia.
Stop
you need
scratching.
Some cooling gel
Go
for
home.
That.
Yeah, you don't need ointment. You need a cooling gel.
If I didn't have creeping Sharia, I wouldn't need that talcum powder.
Right. So,
drop your shorts and bend over, Mr. Babar.
Listen,
I don't have any elephants.
Yeah, right. Elephant books? No.
Ooh, river.
Randall?
Yeah, so, you know it. If you,
that's the danger of me and Hal in 80s movies.
Absolutely. So, it's very hard to find... The people who fear the creeping Sharia as an ideology,
not as a symptom.
Yeah,
I'm creeping Sharia.
That? It's a Metallica song off of Ride the Lightning. No, that's creeping death. My bad. Anyways, the people who fear creeping Sharia or Sharia getting into our legal system,
yes,
almost without exception, probably burqas would be the one area where they get really strong about it, but it's basically because it's a religious garb. Mm-hmm. You know, ask how they feel about a rape victim, and they'll say she should have been wearing more clothing. But
right.
They'll never go to go, what's the difference between that and saying a woman should wear a burqa leaving the house for her own safety? There isn't one. But those same people who fear Sharia support almost every element of it.
Yeah, that's the crazy part, right?
The anti-gay, anti-woman aspects of it, the beating your children, all that stuff that they, you know, the spare the rod kind of ideology of a patriarchal household.
They're not pro-women to begin with.
No! And they're certainly anti-gay.
Right.
You know, that's the amazing part of it. And what do they, here's Here's what I think, and this leads back to the IMF conversation in the last couple moments that we have Johnny Million with us, and we'll have him all 2 hours tomorrow on the House Parks Radio program, Mega Worldwide, on WCPT Radio, and of course on ChicagosProgressive.com, and the TuneIn Radio app on Progressive Voices, which David Bender is now the political director of, and there's going to be the David Bender Show.
Love it.
It's a great way to listen to Steph's show when you're, you know, out of range of a radio, except when you're out in the deep reeds of Rush World, where
you're in the midst of your 7-hour hike.
Yes, where the Heritage Foundation has bought up all the radio towers in an area and is paying all these right wingers to stay on the air because the advertising base isn't supportive there.
I was actually just going to say, if you're going on a Steph-like hike in honor of Steph,
yeah,
and
you
want to listen to
take
Steph.
Take your smartphone.
Yeah, take the phone.
Yeah, and listen to it on the
and call for help when you run out of energy
progressive?
On your 7-mile hike.
Progressive.
Your 7-hour hike.
Yeah. She doesn't run out of energy in that part. Yeah.
No.
But the creepy Sharia folks.
Yes. How does this relate back to the IMF, though?
I'll tell you, okay. I'm getting to that. Is that one of the things I believe that the American economic structure has against the Muslim world, and really they actually care more about than any kind of religious conflict and stuff, and I think the IMF's behavior leans towards this, and the act of the Troika and the three big creditors that were, you know, manhandling Greece last year, treating Greece like it has taught the world to treat their partners over the years. You're welcome. Is that they still use the rule of interest loans? Interest-based loans are a violation of the religion. The idea that usury, which is the lending of money for a financial return in the form of interest as opposed to investment, is against the Old Testament, and it's against Muslim beliefs. It's in the old Abrahamic
making tradition. Money off of lending money.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Is part of the all the deep religions of the Abrahamic tradition. It is that Orthodox Jews can't operate that way, nor can Muslims. It's an intrinsic part of it. Now, if you're a big bank and your entire system is based not only of lending money at interest, but using that as a machine for keeping people in debt circular throughout their entire lives, that it actually is both a social engineering tool in that you can keep the middle class from ever breaking through or the poor from breaking ever through into the middle class, and you can kind of use it as a way to keep people where they're living paycheck to paycheck. It's a great tool for that, and that the interest itself can stop a business in its tracks early, because you start a restaurant, you owe interest on the loan you took on that place the next month. You don't owe it when it starts becoming profitable or working, which is why a lot of restaurants fail and stuff, because they're ice skating uphill from day one.
Right, because your interest payments are tacked on to your payment in general.
And Muslim banks in the non-usury format means that you don't loan that money in interest. You get a profit based on when they start doing well. So if you start making money, even if it's next month, you start turning over a profit and that kind of stuff, you give me 10% of the profit that you're getting after your costs are all paid. If you can't pay your rent, you still owe the interest on your loan.
Right.
Right.
If you can't pay your rent, it's a little more debt. You use part of your loan to pay the rent as the business starts to build. And usury is one of the ways that really hamstrings business.
And that's why they don't like it.
They hate it. Because if Muslim banks, for example, were able to open up all over the place, people are like, you know, I don't necessarily think the religion's all that, you know, my business, or I don't want to be an Orthodox Jew, for example, but I don't like the idea of a non-usury loan that's based on you guys make money if I make money, that it's basically a bank investment. You have to make the same tap dance in front of a bank just for an interest-based loan anyways.
Right.
You have to prove it's going to be profitable. You have to have a business plan. What the hell? So I think that's one of the big snags, is that they're afraid that the monetary system of the Muslim world will actually creep.
But do you think someone like Michelle Bachmann, who's screaming about creeping Sharia law?
No, but she's a tool of those people.
I was going to say, because I don't think she thinks that deeply into it.
Right, because they wouldn't support her for her religious beliefs. You know, the people who bankroll people like that for their congressional seats? Absolutely not, especially time after time after time. She's a useless member of the Congress.
Isn't somebody like Michelle Bachmann just blurting that stuff out in the same way that the constantly a Republican or a conservative will speak their mind and like what they actually believe, like the governor of Ohio is saying, oh, I have no problem with civil unions, and then you contact his office like they did with Mitt Romney, and they get it walked back. They don't know what they believe. They get told what to believe by dark.
They get a message.
Void.
Yeah. There's a reason why, you know, Bill O'Reilly does talking points on his show, reads them to you like a child as they scroll by, which Colbert makes great laughter of. But by the way, Bill O'Reilly, that's the first time he's seen those words. Those are written by guys who edit his show.
We'll do it live.
Yeah, right, exactly. I'll write it later and we'll do it. That was, by the way, on hard copy or whatever.
Oh, that was
current affair, whatever.
Google that. Google Bill O'Reilly will do it live.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have seen that by now.
Oh, totally.
Right? I hope so.
But the essence is he doesn't see those things. He gets those are marching orders.
You know, he attacked me once on
what?
That talking point segment.
Just once?
Yeah, I only had that once, but he attacked me once on that segment, and my father had watched Bill O'Reilly and thought, he's a decent. And I said, you know, he attacked me, Dad, like on the air. Dad won't watch him anymore.
Right. I will say
thank
this.
Thank goodness.
Just to clarify, in case anybody's grabbing clips to put on Bill O'Reilly's show, that Bill O'Reilly is a pinhead with a manhood problem, and that the way he, instead of standing on the value of his ideas, he shouts and forwards them, you know, forces them on people through cut mics and silliness. And anybody knows who's listened to my show or when I fill in on Step, if I come across a conservative who differs with me, I will engage that person. And I will, the only time I will shout them down is if I think they're being epithetic and, you know, derogatory for the sake of doing it or talking in circles just to get out of it. But
over and over, that's what people always say about the way you engage in any kind of conflict. If anybody ever tries to debate you, they're blown away by the fact that you give them time.
Right. Yeah. And Bill O'Reilly is a coward in that regard. I find.
Well, there's no stronger argument.
Write this down, Newsbusters. Bill O'Reilly is a coward with a manhood problem, and he should retire with a loofah to a hilltop somewhere and spend his money on something other than saying things that I actually don't think he believes, but are good money makers for him, which makes him an opportunistic infection. As far as journalism goes. Other than that, I have no opinion. Johnny Million, we got to take a break because we got this like 3 minutes left when we come back because we're at the end of the show.
I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yes, you will.
CPT.
Yes, right. HSRPM tomorrow on WCPT Radio. Thank you, Johnny, for calling in this week. And thanks for everybody for calling in. We're going to get a couple of calls when we come back, but we're going to say our goodbyes for the week, too, because it's been a great time. Thanks.
I'm kind of known for having a twisted sense of humor.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
My love, baby, oh so bad. You're not the only one I've
ever. If any song sums up my week with Tony, it's I Love It Loud. Listen to this first line. That's right. No, I never could be tamed. Better believe it. I love it loud.
I'm feeling a little pouty.
Yeah.
I am.
We've only got like 4 minutes left in the show.
I want to stomp my feet and throw a tantrum.
I know.
I don't want it to end.
Well, that's why, you know, I think you got to come on the Saturday show with us as a regular thing, and we'll build it into something beautiful.
Aww.
That's what I think. And you can still make it to spinning.
We'll yeah, I can do early, and then I can go to spin class afterwards.
I agree. And by the way, I just posted on Twitter the two articles that I was talking about as far as the Greek bailout. One of them's from Fire Dog Late that's quoting the Taibbi article. And then, of course, the news story about the IMF chief getting raided about a, you know, this. And this was stuff she did, by the way, in France as their finance minister that's taken them 10 years to build a case on her for. And, you know, so they took their own sweet time.
Mm-hmm.
And during the time that this woman, you know, worked her way to be the chief banker of the world in many ways through the IMF and the control that this group has on economies all over the world, that this is the kind of person who was able to make her way up. And obviously she's innocent until proven guilty and all these other things, but if any indication of how they treat economies and how their actions have paid out, it's a good indicator. And we'll talk about this more tomorrow, by the way. Let's get two calls real quick because they've been hanging on for a very long time, and I appreciate it. Andrew in California, real quick.
Hey, Hal, how are you doing today?
Great.
Great. It's been a really good week. I appreciate that you guys had filled in for Stephanie.
Mm-hmm.
Your conversations and your topics are, you know, really highbrow. I have to take a couple extra energy drinks in the morning.
Yes. Well, it's a Tuesday's morning. I pound these things when I'm working.
I'm excited. I'm going to discover the Steez.
She discovered Steez.
Yeah.
this week. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I would give you guys a grade of an A minus.
Great.
I
mean, that's fine. Nice. Better than anything I ever did in school.
It's nice that you know the Chinese word for air fart, but not being able to find it on the sound machine.
I'm not using her. I'm using a totally different sound machine. I have my own set of buttons.
His own box.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Tony, great job on the music. Although if you could have found the Lunatics Have Taken Over the Asylum by Collide, that would have been a great.
We're gonna build a list for
you guys.
Yeah, I'll get it for next time.
Okay.
Yeah.
And as far as Jackie goes, speaking for all the straight members of the audience, any morning I get to see more Jackie is going to be a good day.
Aww. Absolutely. I agree. Let's go to Wheezy in Kentucky. We've only got 2 minutes left. So, Wheezy, hi.
Oh, my God. Hal.
Hi.
Oh, my God. You are so beautiful, and I love Jackie. I love this whole show. I watch it every day, honey. I don't even get up on the weekends.
There's no Jackie,
but
so
Hal,
why?
I got to tell you, honey, you're handsome, man.
He is super dreamy.
You, I'm going to have a damn cigarette after I get through talking to you.
Well, I don't recommend it. Please have an electric cigarette. Thank you. And maybe that's why they call you Wheezy. But thank you for calling. Yes.
Well, I smoked for 55 years and then I quit.
Well, I'm glad you quit.
Yeah.
And
go back.
Yes. Be well. We gotta go because we're at the tail end of the show. We only got about 45 seconds left, and it's been so fantastic. And I want to thank Jackie for coming in and being with us all week long.
It's been amazing.
It has been.
Thank you.
Thanks to Rick Overton and the Angry Black Lady, Monty Gandhi,
and Katie Speak,
and Johnny Million, and unfortunately Lee Camp couldn't be with us, but him and Carl Frisch and Charlie
David
Pierce
Bender.
And David Bender for being with us. Thanks Rebecca Taylor.
Eric Bowler.
Baker Taylor on
Baker
Instagram.
Taylor?
Yeah, Rebecca Baker Taylor. And Tony. I mean,
it's fun always, man.
It totally is.
When we do that music podcast, I'm in.
Yeah.
Just like, give me a call.
It's going to happen. We're going to teach the world how to rock.
That's right.
Thank you guys so much. Steph will be back on Monday. Have a great weekend. Take care of yourselves and take care of somebody else.